Hello, I'm Mina, a presenter on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition of the Talking News is for Wednesday, 25th of November, 2020.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes and not the usual plastic wallets, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Edward, Helen, David, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country, we have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, and on This Week in History with Flashback Roger, a look at how local sportsman Rex Williams put snooker on the map, the weather, and a short story from Graham. Before we get to the news, I have for you the answer for the brain teaser left by Mina at the end of last week's edition. She asked, "What am I? I begin with an E. I end with an E. I only contain one letter, but I am not the letter E. Did you get it?" The answer to that was an envelope. Well, I hope you all got that right, but if not, there's another one to try later. Anyway, up next we have our first local news roundup, brought to you by Ian, Angela, and first up, Christine.
A new walk-through coronavirus testing facility has opened in Wolverhampton in addition to the new mass testing centre. People with virus symptoms will now be able to book appointments at Whitmore Rains Library car park in the city. The site, based on Bargate Drive, opened up on Thursday with appointments available each day. It means there are now a total of 7 testing sites, whether walk-through or drive-through, in the city overall. Councillor Jasbir Jaspal, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Public Health and Wellbeing, said, "We have worked incredibly hard in partnership with the Department for Health and Social Care to make COVID-19 testing available to anyone who needs it in Wolverhampton. We now have test centres at 7 convenient locations right across the city, and the message is clear. If you have symptoms, you simply must get tested." The Whitmore Rains Test Centre joins 6 other test sites in the city for people with symptoms of COVID-19. A drive-through centre at Aldersley Leisure Village and a walk-through centres at Falkland Street, Showell Road and Blakenhall Community Resource Centre in Wolverhampton, the Sikh Community Centre on Rookery Street in Wensfield and at Mountford Lane in Bilston. All sites are accessible via appointment only, except for the Falkland Street Centre, which also has up to 50 tests per day available on a first-come, first-served basis for those without an appointment.
A war of words has erupted between councillors in Dudley over the handling of coronavirus as cases continue to rise in the borough. Councillor Shaukat Ali said a delay in testing and mixed messages from Tory-led Dudley Council may be responsible for the spike. But leader Councillor Patrick Harley has hit back, claiming the Labour councillor had offered nothing in the fight against the virus. Figures for the borough in the 7 days up to November the 14th show a rate of 568.7 infections per 100,000 people, more than double the national infection rate. Councillor Ali, Labour's health chief on the authority, claimed the mobile testing unit at Merry Hill lacked testing capacity from the start. He said, Dudley Council leaders' mixed messages, late provision of testing facilities and delayed lockdown may have led to this significant increase in cases. In the space of 1 week, we heard the councillor leader say he disagreed with the strengthened lockdown and then he agreed with it, which is not good when what the people of Dudley need most is clarity. We also raised the lack of testing capacity some time ago and asked for resources to be diverted from the failing private companies responsible for testing to local councils. This all fell on deaf ears, resulting in the higher number of positive cases we're now seeing in the community, schools and colleges. Councillor Harley, leader of the council, dismissed the claims and accused Councillor Ali of making silly comments and putting himself first. He said, "Our testing rate has increased significantly, 76% since start of October. As a council, we have just been nominated for a national award for the quality of our communications during the pandemic. You don't get these nominations for sending out mixed messages."
Community Secretary Robert Jenrick says he is looking forward to a successful result over Wolverhampton's £48 million bid for regeneration funding. The City Council has bid for the cash from the Towns Fund, which ministers launched to boost investment in 101 parts of the country. A raft of bids was approved last month, but Wolverhampton Council is still waiting to hear whether its bid for the maximum amount of funding has been successful. However, Mr. Jenrick, who was born in Wolverhampton, gave the strongest hint yet on the status of the bid when speaking in the Commons this week. He said, "I've spoken to the Labour leader of Wolverhampton Council a number of times over the course of the last year. I think that he and his fellow councillors of all party persuasions support the Towns Fund, have put in some very strong proposals, and I look forward to a successful result in due course." In September, a first wave of funding of £5.5 million was announced for Wolverhampton, Dudley, Walsall, Bloxwich, Rowley Regis and West Bromwich. Telford was given £1 million to create enterprise hubs, regenerate units in Oakengates and Wellington, and for continued investment in the Telford Town Centre's station quarter. Wolverhampton has earmarked a series of projects for funding. They include £10 million for City Learning Quarter, £2.6 million for the National Brownfield Institute, and £1 million for Jobs Scheme Wolves at Work. Other projects include a £3 million boost to the Grand Theatre's expansion, as well as £7.5 million for Bilston Market and £4 million to revamp Wensfield.
A public consultation has been launched looking at ways of improving a central part of Dudley. Dudley Council is looking at three projects to regenerate the Castle Hill area, but is first seeking the thoughts of residents. The projects are to develop Dudley Zoo and Castle, building a new university centre and improve open spaces and footpaths between Castle Hill and Dudley Town Centre. Under the plans, council bosses are looking to redevelop four buildings at Dudley Zoo for other uses. These are the Discovery Centre, Elephant House, Queen Mary Ballroom and the Tropical Bird House. The proposals would see the Discovery Centre turned into a catering facility, the Elephant House turned into an enclosure for primates, Queen Mary Ballroom's function as a restaurant extended to have an outside dining area, and turn the Tropical Bird House, which is currently off limits in the lion enclosure, into an education facility. Regarding plans for a new university centre, the Dudley Town Funds is seeking funding from government and regional sources to develop such a facility. This will help to equip people with new skills, create new jobs and boost the local economy, and to improve open spaces and footpaths. The council is looking to regenerate what it calls the physical link between Castle Hill and Dudley Town Centre. It is hoped this will help to increase footfall into the town. As a part of the consultation, people are being asked to take part in a questionnaire which can be found at www.regenerating.org.uk/Castle Hill Consultation.
Wolverhampton's I-9 development has been lined up as a potential location for a government department. Part of the 50,000 square foot development could be taken over by staff from the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, which is expected to move to the West Midlands. Around 1,000 staff are expected to relocate to the region, with 300 set for Wolverhampton and the rest based in Coventry and at the main hub in Birmingham. The I-9 development near the railway station is due to open next summer. Talks are understood to be at an advanced stage, with one business over roughly half of the site, with bosses touting the rest of the plot as an ideal home for the MHCLG. Councillor Ian Brookfield said, "We welcome any investment in Wolverhampton. We have laid down the infrastructure and any government department would find a home here. And why wouldn't they want to come? We have excellent transport, excellent facilities and A-grade office space. It's a fantastic place to be."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen here from the Beacon Centre with your latest update on everything that's been happening here at the charity. I'll pre-warn you, it may still be November, but this week's news is going to be distinctly festive themed. First up, we wanted to tell you all about our Christmas raffle. We're hoping it will raise some much needed funds to support our work with visually impaired people. Sadly, as you may know, we've lost £682,000 in the first 6 months of the pandemic, and we expect that figure to rise as we normally hold a number of festive fundraising events which are unable to take place this year. And in line with COVID-19 restrictions, our shops are also closed throughout November. Instead though, we've taken our Christmas raffle online after the success of a similar one in the summer, and we're hoping as many people as possible will purchase a ticket and support our work. For just £2 per raffle number, you will be in with a chance of winning some fantastic prizes, including a family day ticket for Hoo Farm in Telford, a family ticket to Dudley Zoo, a family ticket to the Mini Pro Golf Park in Kidderminster, two tickets to the Haberley Trail in Kidderminster, Christmas hamper, and an afternoon tea for two at the Mad Hatter's Tea Room in Gornal Village. Our fundraising coordinator, Sarah Dovey, told us, "We've got some fantastic prizes on offer in our Christmas raffle, and we'd like to thank all the organisations who've donated a wonderful prize. Anyone who buys a ticket will be helping us to support people when they need us the most. To get your ticket, you need to log on to the following website, www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Christmas Raffle. That's www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Beacon Christmas Raffle. The raffle will be drawn on December the 14th and terms and conditions apply. You can find them and some of the other ways you can support Beacon over Christmas on our website, www.beaconvision.org/Christmas. As we enter the festive season, and after such a difficult time for us all this year, we think it's more important than ever to remember our loved ones, especially those who are gone but never forgotten. Sadly, due to the ongoing pandemic, our annual forget-me-not tree service, where we light up our Christmas tree in remembrance of all those we've lost, cannot go ahead this year. But we are so determined to still honour those we miss. Here's how you can get involved this year. You can dedicate a light on our traditional Christmas tree, which will keep the festive spirit going in our centre for our care team and the people who live there when it's lit in remembrance on the 17th of December. To make a donation and dedicate a light, call us on 01902 880111 or email fundraising@beaconvision.org. That's 01902 880111 or email fundraising@beaconvision.org. You can also light up our beautiful virtual tree at the following website, www.visufund.com/forget-me-not-tree. That's www.visufund.com/forget-me-not-tree. All you need to do is click donate, choose your decoration and make your dedication. You can even upload a photograph to go alongside your special message. Now, in non-Christmas news, don't forget our stores are still closed at the moment in line with the current COVID-19 restrictions. While we really appreciate people's donations, we are asking people please not to leave them outside our shops when they are shut. They can be a hazard and they're likely to get damaged. We're so looking forward to welcoming you all when our shops are back open. But if you've got any queries about our stores in the meantime, you can call us on 01902 880111. That's it for this week. Speak to you soon.
Thanks for that festive sounding update, Helen. Coming up next, we have more local news with Christine and Angela. But first up, it's Ian.
7 new CCTV cameras have gone live at Castlegate Entertainment Complex in Dudley as part of a £1.7 million security camera upgrade. The cameras have been installed at key sites around the cinema, bars and restaurants. The new cameras are part of a major upgrade of the old, outdated system in town centres and key sites across the borough. More than 1 kilometre of fibre optic cable has been used at Castlegate, and the cameras will be monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They were installed during the national lockdown to minimise impact on businesses. Councillor Laura Taylor, Cabinet Member responsible for community safety, said, "The cameras in town centres are already live and a welcome safety boost for everyone. I'm pleased we now have the cameras live at Castlegate, the first to be completed in phase two, and look forward to other areas benefiting from this significant investment." Castlegate Business Park is a busy leisure and retail destination managed by Black Country-based Bullies Chartered Surveyors. The firm says the upgraded security will appeal to customers and the wider community. The new cameras give much clearer images of sites, which can help in catching and prosecuting offenders.
A nature reserve on the outskirts of Wolverhampton has been given the go-ahead to demolish a former information centre building within its surrounding environment. The structure at the Gorge in Lanesfield has been subjected to repeated vandal attacks and incidents of antisocial behaviour for a considerable period of time, leading to it becoming unsafe. In recent months, the two-storey brick building, which has rendering to its external walls in part, has also become fire damaged in further attacks. Planning bosses agreed to the demolition this week after the council's asset manager, Luke Dove, made an application for the property to be pulled down. Prior to the demolition work, possible asbestos may need to be removed from the building, although this is as yet undetected. Further checks also need to be conducted in order to detect any disused mine shafts on the site. Once the property has been raised, the ground will be made safe and graded before being covered in topsoil. An existing drive will also receive some maintenance work and any spoilt materials will be removed. The council has engaged a landscape architect and tree surgeon to review pruning along the path, which provides access to the building.
A 20-ton coach was used as a battering ram to smash into a building in Dudley. It is believed louts forced their way through the rear door of the Mercedes Turismo at JC Coaches Limited in Netherton and let the handbrake off. The 50-seater vehicle, which was parked outside the premises on Primrose Hill Trading Estate, then rolled into an opposite unit called KJ Fasteners. The callous incident has caused at least £20,000 worth of damage to the huge coach, where the front end has been left battered, while an outbuilding at KJ Fasteners was left with a gaping hole. John Molnar, managing director at the coach firm, said he does not yet know how many people were involved in the incident, as he is still waiting to see CCTV footage from Whittles Jones, which manages the trading estate. A West Midlands police spokesman said, "We're investigating after a coach and wall were damaged at Primrose Industrial Estate, Cradley Road, Netherton, overnight on the 16th of November. We're reviewing CCTV and anyone with information can contact us via live chat or by calling 101.
Electronic rise and fall bollards could be introduced in Wolverhampton city centre in a bid to improve safety for pedestrians. Chiefs at Wolverhampton Council are considering the proposals over concerns of shoppers being put at risk in the city centre. They said some delivery vans and lorries have been ignoring the rules which cover the pedestrianised zone in the city. The zone, which includes Dudley Street, King Street and Queen Street between its junction with Dudley Street and Market Street, prevents vans and lorries passing at certain times. Trial changes were made to the times in June amid the pandemic, with bosses now proposing a series of permanent measures. Councillor Steve Evans, Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for City Environment, said, "What we've seen over the years is that a lot of delivery drivers simply ignore the restrictions and drive into the pedestrianised zone at any time of day, and this is obviously not safe and it is an accident waiting to happen. We made some trial changes over the summer in response to the COVID pandemic to change the times which vehicles could enter the zone. Proposals include the installation of electronic rise and fall bollards to be used to prevent unauthorised entry outside the permitted times.
Tributes have been paid to former Wolves player Gwyn Jones, who helped the club win successive First Division titles in the 1950s. Among those who paid tribute to Gwyn was Richard Green of the Wolves Former Players Association. He said, "On behalf of everyone at Wolves Former Players Association and Wolves, I would like to offer my heartfelt condolences to Gwyn's family. Gwyn was one of our earliest members and a much loved part of the most successful Wolves squad in history, winning two league titles, a charity shield and FA Cup. His contributions on and off the pitch at Wolves will never be forgotten, and he will be greatly missed. Gwyn began his playing career with Carnarvon Town, with dreams of becoming a teacher before fate intervened. He played in a charity match for a Bangor Select 11 against the Wolves first team and did enough to impress then-director Jim Marshall, who offered him the opportunity to play for the club. In those days, he earned £15 a week and would get a £2 bonus for a win and a £1 bonus for a draw. Within 3 months, the fullback made his first team debut in a 3-2 home win over West Bromwich Albion in December 1955. Further appearances for the senior side followed, with Jones featuring in wins over Aston Villa and Chelsea and a 4-0 victory against Manchester United as Wolves claimed the first division title in the 1957-58 season. Gwyn was also part of the squad which would lift a second successive league trophy in 1958-59, making 4 appearances that season, and was part of the starting lineup in the 1959 FA Charity Shield final at Molineux as Wolves ran out 3-1 winners over Nottingham Forest. Jones passed away aged 85 at Pendine Park's Bryn Sionnt Newydd care home in Carnarvon, North Wales, where he had lived since February this year after being diagnosed with dementia.
We have 2 more news updates coming up, but now it's time to cross over to Mina.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you'll need can be found later in Flashback Rogers, This Week in History section, if you listen carefully. But for now, here are your questions for this week. Question 1. What was the title of the first ever episode of Doctor Who? Question 2. What was the name of the man who assassinated President Kennedy? Question 3. In what year did Bob Geldof produce Do They Know It's Christmas? Question 4. What was the name of Britain's first computer programmer? Question 5. In what year was the first automobile race held in the USA? And question 6. How old was the oldest woman in the world? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later. Good luck!
I look forward to hearing those answers later, Mina. But now we have more local news, with Christine and Ian. But kicking us off this time, it's Angela.
Talks between Wolverhampton Council and Odeon over the West Side project have been put on hold due to the COVID pandemic. It was announced earlier this year that the authority had come to a conditional agreement with the UK firm to build a Lux cinema at the £55 million site off Salop Street. But council bodies have now confirmed that talks with Odeon are not progressing due to the impact of the coronavirus lockdown on the cinema industry. Odeon employs 5,400 staff across 120 cinemas in the UK and Ireland. It has been forced to close all its sites for the second time this year due to the latest national lockdown. Richard Lawrence, Wolverhampton's Director of Regeneration, gave an update on the West Side project to the Stronger City Economy Scrutiny Panel. He said the authority would continue to liaise with West Side developer Urban and Civic and Odeon. Work on West Side was due to start in August for a planned opening in summer 2022. It has been delayed due to the pandemic. Once completed, it will feature mini golf, 10-pin bowling, a multi-storey car park, restaurants and shops. Council bosses have mooted an extended version of the scheme featuring hotels and a football quarter centering around a revamped Molineux.
Once thriving shops are gradually disappearing from Black Country High Streets. Today, just 2 out of the 7 shops in this block at the heart of Dudley Town Centre are still in business. In the past 8 months, 5 out of the 7 shops in the block on the corner of Stone Street and High Street have shut as the impact of the coronavirus has taken its toll. The most recent casualty is Kerner Jewellers at the entrance to the Fountain Arcade, which closed last month after 164 years. A notice was posted on the shutters informing customers that the shop was now closed and directing anybody who had taken items in for repair to contact Metz Wilkins Jewellers in Bilston. Since the first lockdown in March, River Island, Bon Marché, Boots Pharmacy and Roger Scott Menswear have all closed their doors in Dudley.
Moves to open a new Costa Coffee drive-through and Greg's Bakery close to Wolverhampton city centre have been rejected by planning bosses following concerns the development would blight the area's historic character. Decorating firm S.J. Dixon & Son Limited, which has been trading in the city since 1854, had applied for permission to demolish a series of disused warehouse buildings at its Cleveland Road premises to allow for the scheme. The site, which also borders Bilston Road and Hospital Street, falls within the Cleveland Road Conservation Area. This includes the nearby Grade 2 listed Royal Hospital building, the former Baker's Shoe Factory, also Grade 2 listed, and the adjacent Dixon's building, which is locally listed. However, the Council's Planning Committee this week voted unanimously to refuse the proposals following an earlier site visit. Senior Planning Officer Vijay Kaul said objections to the proposals had earlier been received from Historic England, the Victorian Society and All Saints Action Network. Each agreed that the warehouse buildings should be retained and reused differently, possibly for residential accommodation. The Victorian Society said the existing buildings still contributed to the streetscape and setting of the former Royal Hospital. However, expert building surveyors have confirmed the cost of bringing them back to a usable condition comes to around £2.3 million, with the applicant, Tim Dixon, stating, "We simply don't have the funds to undertake these works."
A cake maker whose clients include Arnold Schwarzenegger and Floyd Mayweather fears his business may not survive due to coronavirus. Paz Heer, 39, of Essington, is no longer serving any clients due to the second national lockdown. It comes at a time when he had plans to revamp his business called AB Cakes, which is located at Snow Hill in Wolverhampton, with a new studio and lounge area for customers. He said, "I'm definitely concerned about the future of my business. Who knows whether we will survive? I had casual staff who I had to let go during the first lockdown. There are no weddings or big parties. I've got no custom at the minute. People are inquiring for after December 2nd when lockdown is set to end, but I'm not too convinced about us getting back to normal after that." Mr. Heer operated for 12 years. His clientele includes Hollywood actors Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone, world champion boxers Floyd Mayweather and Anthony Joshua, and world's strongest man Eddie Hall. This has earned him the nickname Cake Maker to the Stars. But despite the difficulties of COVID-19, Mr. Heer is staying positive and he hopes to get into the celebrity world even more so.
A Dudley business owner has thanked people on social media for the help he got with getting his trailer back. Daryl James had put out an appeal on Facebook for help with finding the trailer for his business Boston Butties, which has disappeared from Hurst Business Park in Bridie Hill. He said he had seen more than 7,000 shares on the social media site on Monday, November the 16th, and was subsequently contacted by someone who said they had seen the trailer. Mr. James said, "They told me that she had seen the signage from my pictures and was looking directly at the people who were stripping the trailer. She called the police and told me where the trailer was, in a small car park hidden in an industrial estate in Cates Hill in Dudley." Mr. James said he got to the site where the trailer was found with police on site and was able to pick up the trailer. He said they had stripped out all the vinyl wrapping and the signs off, taken the lights out and caused a lot of damage to the exterior as they were pulling it. "It might be I can't get it back to working condition if the equipment inside has been seriously damaged, but at least I've got it back and I can start to work on it." Mr. James offered his thanks to everyone on social media who had shared his post and done their bit to help him recover the £15,000 trailer. He said it proves that social media isn't such a bad place, and it's good to know that people could help us through sharing and posting for us.
With news from Dudley Council concerning their COVID-19 Community Champions scheme, and a reminder about a campaign concerning e-scooters and pavement parking, it's Ed.
COVID-19 and the measures taken in response continue to impact all of us in Dudley and the UK. The COVID-19 Community Champions Network will help residents in Dudley remain up to date on the latest advice about COVID-19. The council will help residents informed of the latest advice and guidance so that you can help your family, friends and other community members to make sense of the latest facts about the virus. By having and sharing clear information, you, your friends, family and community can make informed choices. Would you like to become a COVID-19 Community Champion? COVID-19 Community Champions are residents across Dudley. Champions can be anyone in the community. You might be the person that everyone knows and trusts. You might be someone who wants to help in whatever way you can, even if this is your first time. You sign up to be a champion. We give champions the latest information about COVID-19. Champions share this information with anyone in their community however they want. Champions let us know what is and isn't working. Together, we can do all we can to make sure that everyone in Dudley has the information they need to stay safe and healthy. Thank you for your part in making this happen. To find out more about being a COVID-19 Community Champion, visit dudley.gov.uk/COVID-Champions or ring 07980 953 508. A couple of weeks ago, we mentioned a campaign being run by sight loss councils called Streets for All. They warned that the increase in e-scooters, as well as cluttered pavements, shared space schemes and pavement parking are threatening the safety and independence of visually impaired people. In order to tackle this issue, they launched a national survey asking for people's views on their experiences surrounding e-scooter use and pavement parking. These surveys are still ongoing, and if you would like your voice heard, you can find out more and take part by visiting www.sightlosscouncils.org.uk/streetsforall.
Cheers, Ed. Now with our final news roundup, it's Ian and Angela. But first off, we start with Christine.
A song about a homeless Wolverhampton man who lived next to the ring road for more than 30 years has been re-released to mark the date of his passing. Singer and songwriter Ryan Evans from Purton has released a version of Destitution Man, an ode to the memory of Joseph Stowinoga, affectionately known as Fred the Tramp. Joseph died on October 28, 2007, at the age of 86, having lived in a tent on Wolverhampton Ring Road for more than 30 years. The song was originally recorded by Ryan's uncle, Ian Dowderswell, in 1991, and the 27-year-old said he was releasing his version to help young people know who Joseph was. He said, "My version of the track aims to help remind the youth of today who he was, as I don't think a lot of them remember him now. My uncle and my dad actually attended his funeral, and we used to collaborate together in a band, so I've been around that song a lot." Ryan has performed the song himself throughout his solo career, playing it in the middle of his sets, and said his uncle was inspired to write it after seeing Joseph sweeping up outside his tent. He said, "My uncle is a songwriter and a Wolverhampton lad, and he used to walk past there and see Fred the Tramp cleaning up leaves. There's actually a very poignant line in the track where he sings, 'He sweeps the leaves and sweeps the cans. He doesn't have so many plans.' I think the song speaks of Fred and what an icon he was at the time, so I wanted to get it back into the public eye and mark the anniversary of his passing."
A new woodland walk has opened at an outdoor education centre. Kingswood Trust in Albrighton near Wolverhampton has opened the mile-long Wild Walk and Nature Play Track. The Trust charity manager Rachel Wells said, "It's basically a mile walk around the grounds. We've got a 9-acre site, it's a mapped route around the site, and there's a lot of information for adults and places to play for the children. We've got a good outdoor space with lots of things to do, and we're meeting the COVID criteria. A lot of people are worried about going out, but it's good to get out and get some exercise, and we are COVID safe. The other thing families are enjoying is they can look at the sheep and the chickens. We've got a snack stop called Woody's, and we're able to serve takeaway drinks and snacks. It's nice for them to get a coffee and be in the outdoors. We're having a maximum number of people to be COVID compliant. We're allowing up to 40 families, and they have to book via Eventbrite."
Plans for a sculpture at Russell's Hall honouring Dudley's COVID heroes has gained further backing, with builders merchants Travis Perkins stepping in with support. The project is being led by local councillor Kieran Casey, who is hoping to raise around £30,000 for a sculpture at the front of the borough's main hospital. It would be a permanent reminder and thank you for the work done by the NHS, healthcare, key workers and volunteers during the pandemic throughout the borough. Since it was launched a few months ago, a host of local, regional and national businesses have pledged their support. Now, Travis Perkins, which has locations across the borough, have pledged to help with materials for the landscaping around the sculpture. Councillor Casey said, "It's so important that we always remember what so many people have done for us throughout Dudley during these difficult times, from treating loved ones to ensuring our supermarkets stay open for us to use, and to all the community volunteers that have provided a lifeline to so many. We owe more than words can say to those on the front line of this fight. It's fantastic that Travis Perkins have pledged their support."
Community spirit in two Dudley streets is ensuring COVID won't beat Christmas this year. Led by Dave and Sue Coyne, the residents of Bird Street and Wood Road in Lower Gornal have arranged their own Christmas light switch-on to replace the usual celebrations cancelled by lockdown. But there's more Christmas cheer with a special tree being delivered, music, mulled wine and Santa delivering selection boxes for all the children. All, of course, carefully socially distanced. The residents of the two streets came together during the first lockdown, initially for the clap for carers and organising bingo. The community spirit has continued through VE Day celebrations and now all the Christmas planning. Between 60 and 80 houses in the two roads are expected to take part in a switch-off, switch-on celebration. At 5:50pm on Saturday, November 28th, people are being asked to shut off their lights and then turn them on at 6pm all together to light up Christmas. Special outside lights aren't necessary, but some people are decking the front of the house and others are putting small trees in their gardens. "It's been a really good community effort which has carried on since first lockdown," said Stuart Atkiss.
The battle to protect the wildlife and open spaces across Dudley Borough has been given a £12,000 boost. That's how much has been donated to the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust by the Mayor of Dudley, Councillor David Stanley. Or very nearly, anyway. The total raised for the Trust as part of the Mayor's charity appeal was £11,965.25. And the money is badly needed, with Dudley's wildlife and urban areas under immense pressure. A 2019 survey suggested more than 40% of all the wildlife was on the decline, and 15% of species in the country are at risk of extinction, including 41% of all insects. With more than 7,000 members, the Wildlife Trust locally is at the forefront of trying to halt that decline. A variety of events were delivered by the Mayor and his team to encourage donations, including a charity cricket match, a donation from local recycling centre HW Martin Waste Limited, and selling items including a guitar, weights and a Bob Marley LP. Emma Thompson from the Trust said, "We are absolutely delighted. As the Trust celebrates its 40th anniversary, this donation will help us to conserve biodiversity, improve the local environment and raise awareness and understanding of wildlife issues." Councillor Stanley is currently serving his second term as Mayor of Dudley and chooses two charities each term for the Mayor's charity appeal. Councillor Stanley said, "I put a lot of thought into my choice. I see the amount of time and efforts the Wildlife Trust has given to the borough and how worthwhile the work is." For more information about the work of the Birmingham and Black Country Wildlife Trust, visit www.bbcwildlife.org.uk.
Sports still to come, but now we have the man with all the facts. It's Flashback Roger.
This is our flashback section, where we take a look back at some of the events that took place in the week of the 23rd to the 29th of November of past years, and where you'll find the answers to the quiz questions that were set earlier. On November the 23rd, 1963, the British TV programme Doctor Who debuts, starring William Hartnell as the Doctor in the episode called An Unearthly Child. On November the 24th, 1963, John F. Kennedy's assassin Lee Harvey Oswald is shot and mortally wounded by Jack Ruby as he was being led through the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Oswald had shot and killed the US President John F. Kennedy 2 days earlier. November 25th, 1984, Do They Know It's Christmas? This song was recorded under the direction of Irish singer Bob Geldof. There were numerous artists, including Sting, Phil Collins, Boy George, George Michael and Bono. They recorded the song to raise money for the Ethiopian famine relief. It became Britain's biggest ever-selling record. Born on November the 26th in 1815, Ada Lovelace was an English mathematician and the first computer programmer. She is chiefly known for her work on Charles Babbage's mechanical general-purpose computer, the Analytical Engine. Her notes on the engine include an algorithm to calculate Bernoulli numbers, wherever they are. This is recognised as the first algorithm intended to be carried out by a machine, making her the first computer programmer. November the 28th in 1895, the first US automobile race took place. The race was initially banned by police, who would not allow them to drive their automobiles on city streets. It ran from Chicago to Evanston, Illinois and back. It was 54 miles. It was run by Charles and Frank Duryea with an average speed of, wait for it, yes, it was a colossal 7 miles an hour. Born on November the 29th, 1899, Emma Morano was an Italian supercentenarian and the world's oldest living person at the time of her death, which was 117 years old in 2017. She is also the last living person verified to have been born in the 1800s. She was the oldest Italian person ever. That's this week's. I hope you do well in the quiz. See you next time. Keep safe. She's Rod saying ta-ra for now. Ta-ra.
As always, Roger, some fantastic facts there. Now it's time to look at the weather for the week ahead with Mina.
The weather for this week is dry and settled, and there's little chance of much persistent sunlight as clouds remain a constant. Light winds will be blowing from an easterly direction for most of the week, and you can expect average temperatures for the time of year hovering typically between 7 and 10 degrees with low UV levels all week. Now, the sunrise and sunset times are 7:56 a.m. for the sunrise and 3:58 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 27th of November right through to Thursday 3rd of December, we currently have light cloud and a gentle breeze forecast with a maximum temperature of 10 degrees and a low of 3 expected. In other weather news, with Christmas on the horizon, the odds have been slashed on the chance of white Christmas. Long-range forecasts are predicting an Arctic blast which could bring snow for many across the UK, with temperatures of minus 10 expected to be widespread. We will, of course, keep a watch on this as we get closer to the festive period, but for now, that's your forecast for the week. So, as always, enjoy the weather.
Well, I'd love to see a white Christmas, Mina, but I'm sceptical myself. Anyway, coming up for you now, we have Ian with an update about our teams in the Premier League.
Albion head coach Slaven Bilic has backed the reintroduction of 5 substitutes in Premier League. The EFL has decided to reintroduce a rule that allows teams to make as many as 5 subs in a game, something that first came into effect for Project Restart. The Premier League is the only major competition in Europe which opted to return to just 3 substitutions at the start of the 2020-21 campaign. Liverpool's Jurgen Klopp and Manchester City's Pep Guardiola have both been critical of the decision and believe it has led to an increase in injuries this season. But some bosses fear more subs plays to the strengths of the bigger clubs who have more strength in depth at their disposal. Bilic, though, believes the 5 subs rule should be introduced for the physical and mental well-being of players. It would benefit every club in the sense of the welfare of the players, the boss said. The schedule now, especially for the teams who are playing in Europe, it's hard and difficult, and then you have international games. It would help to keep the health of the players. We spoke about it as managers for 2 or 3 hours in a meeting on Wednesday. For me, the Premier League must decide. I think that the welfare of the players is the most important thing. It isn't only for Liverpool or Man City. It is a strange season. The break after last season wasn't long enough. It's very difficult on and off the pitch for players who can't see their families, as they've done last season or in a normal season. We have to help the players to stay in a good state of mind and to keep them away from the injuries. The thing with the 3 or 5 substitutions should have a big impact on that. Albion fell to the cruelest of defeats at Manchester United, with Bruno Fernandes winning the points for his side with a twice-taken penalty. Sam Johnstone, playing against the team he joined as a 10-year-old, made 2 outstanding saves in the first half to deny Anthony Martial. But this game will be remembered for a crazy spell shortly after the restart that meant it was VAR and referee David Coote who came away the main talking points. In the 53rd minute, Coote awarded Albion a penalty after Fernandes fouled Conor Gallagher in the box. The Portuguese midfielder did get a touch on the ball but then took the man in what looked a clear spot kick. But Coote, after being called to his monitor, decided to overturn his decision despite it appearing that anywhere else on the pitch it would have been a foul. To add insult to injury, United were then awarded a penalty of their own when Juan Mata's cross hit the arm of Darnell Furlong with his back turned. Fernandes took it and saw his effort saved by Johnstone, but VAR judged the keeper had strayed from his line and ordered it to be retaken. And at the second attempt, Fernandes did score. Incredibly, Albion then saw substitute Callum Johnson rattle the crossbar with a fierce effort from 20 yards. But despite a display full of grit, guts and determination, they couldn't find an equaliser, and that meant they were forced to come away with nothing. West Brom now find themselves 19th in the table on 3 points, and next take on bottom side Sheffield United at home on Saturday. Nuno Espirito Santo has hailed Adama Traore as a huge player for Wolves and hopes his contract situation can be resolved down the line. Nuno, having signed a new 3-year contract himself, has recently seen several of his stars agree new deals, and it was hoped Traore would follow suit. Talks between the Spaniard and the club over fresh and improved terms, though, have stalled. The situation is currently an impasse, but Nuno, when the time is right, wants to get the matter sorted, as he said. Of course, Adama is a huge player for us. The impact he has had on the games, what he gives to the team, what he has been giving to the team these last 2 seasons, what he still has to give and has to improve. Of course, I want all the players to be happy here. Traore has not been in the starting lineup over the past several weeks, but on the back of a stunning 2019-20 campaign, he was in line for a new deal. Skipper Conor Cody committed his long-term future to Wolves shortly after Nuno, before top scorer Raul Jimenez put pen to paper on a new deal. Soon after those two, defender Max Kilman was handed a fresh 5-year contract, and Traore was thought to be the next in the queue. Pedro Neto, though, was the one to follow in the footsteps of Kilman, Jimenez and Cody, and talks with exciting winger Traore have not progressed as originally hoped. Wolves are understood to be relaxed over the situation and are not putting too much pressure on the Spaniard, with his current deal at Molineux running until the summer of 2023. Although it might not have delivered a victory, the final 20 minutes in Wolves' 1-1 draw with Southampton may yet perhaps be enough to spark Wolves' season into life. To this point, their campaign has provided for the optimists and pessimists in equal measure, and this match looked like serving up further fuel for the latter. Nuno Espirito Santo's men trailed to Theo Walcott's 58th-minute opener and were fortunate not to be further behind after the same player missed a golden chance to double Southampton's lead. But the introduction of Pedro Neto was enough to shift the momentum. Within 5 minutes, the 20-year-old had restored parity and, more importantly, a Wolves attack which had struggled for cohesion through most of the match and much of the season suddenly had life. Despite springing into life, a winner proved elusive, with the visiting keeper Alex McCarthy capping an impressive night by denying Neto with his legs. But a point, in the grand scheme of things, was hardly a bad one against a Saints team who were targeting a 4th straight win on the road. The result sees Wolves 9th in the Premier League with 14 points, and they next face Arsenal at the Emirates on Sunday.
Thanks for that, Ian. And sticking with a sports theme, we now have David with a story about the Black Country snooker player Rex Williams and how he put his sport on the map.
How local snooker legend Rex Williams' big break helped bring his sport to the masses. Rex Williams hadn't even reached his teens when his family realised he knew his way around a billiards table. His father, Bill, Having been tipped off that Rex was taking on all comers on the 8-foot table at his Blackheath Printworks, brought in a full-size one and watched the boy play. He was a natural almost from the moment he first picked up a cue, racking up 153 break within 3 months of starting to play. Rex showed a similar aptitude for snooker and had soon landed the first of many titles as he embarked on a journey that would see him become a true heavyweight in both sports. Now 87, his incredible career and service to snooker and billiards has been recognised with the award of a British Empire Medal in the Queen's Honours List. It's a great honour and very unexpected, as you don't get these things happening very often late in life, he said, speaking from his home in Hackman's Gate near Clent, where he lives with his wife Rita. Billiards and snooker have been my life, from playing as a small boy to being a professional for so many years. I've played more snooker over the years, and that's where most people probably know me from, but it's great to see the mother sport of billiards getting recognised for the first time, particularly for the younger billiards players coming through. Rex was born in Stourbridge and lived in Romsley before his family moved to Blackheath so his father could be closer to work. He hit his first century in snooker aged 15, during a post-war period when billiards and snooker shared the same high levels of popularity. After winning the under-19 and amateur snooker championships, his reputation grew, and he had turned professional by the early 1950s. A career filled with high points would take him all around the world. Rex won the World Billiards Championship 7 times, firstly in 1968. In Cape Town in 1965, he made the second ever recognised maximum 147 break, and to this day is the oldest player to get to a world ranking final, losing to Jimmy White in the 1986 Rothmans Grand Prix at the age of 53. He came closest to landing the World Snooker Championship in 1972, losing in the final frame of an epic semi-final battle against an up-and-coming talent by the name of Alex Higgins, who went on to become champion for the first time that year. "Alex told me how winning that final frame changed his career," recalls Rex. "At the start, I was playing safety shots that Alex didn't know, but not long afterwards, he was playing the same shots. He was learning as we went on in the match, which shows what a wonderful snooker brain he had. Higgins is not the only snooker great he has fond memories of. He speaks glowingly of pioneers such as Fred and Joe Davis and describes Australian billiards ace Walter Linderham as the greatest player that ever lived. In fact, he's probably the greatest sportsman who ever lived, Rex says. His record was just unbelievable. People think snooker started in the 80s because it was always on the television, but there were some great players around before that. He loved Jimmy White, who he beat 5-1 in his first professional game and refers to as a very nice, polite young man and a great player, and says 6-time world champion Ronnie O'Sullivan is the most natural player he has ever seen. If it wasn't for Rex, there may not have been a professional game for them to thrive at. The advent of television in the 1950s had hit snooker hard, with people sitting at home in front of the box rather than heading out to the clubs. Interest started to return in the following decade, but there was no proper championship or organisation, something which Rex decided to put right. One of the big venues, Leicester Square Hall, had been closed for a while, and I wanted to get things up and running again, he recalls. Fred Davis said I was wasting my time, but I called everyone to a meeting at my home in Stourbridge, and I ended up organising a challenge match at Burroughs and Watts in London. A knockout tournament followed before Rex founded and became first chairman of the World Professional Billiards and Snooker Association in 1970. Helped by the BBC television series Pot Black, snooker began to surge in popularity. By the time the championships were held at the Crucible in 1977, there was blanket coverage on the small screen. Snooker really took off, says Rex. Television had nearly killed it years earlier, but it played a big part in its growth going into the 1980s. It is easy to film and doesn't depend on the weather, which really makes it the perfect sport for television. Rex retired from the professional game aged 61, by which time he was already into a 20-year career as a commentator, where he offered analysis alongside the likes of Ted Lowe. Unsurprisingly, after dedicating more than half a century to the game, his appetite had waned. "You can play snooker at the top level well into your 50s, but it's about motivation, Rex says. When I first became a pro, I could practice all day. You had to drag me off the table. Then when I got into my 40s, practicing for 10 minutes was hard work. That's what some of these players now will find. For people like O'Sullivan and John Higgins, practicing has got to be hard, and that is what eventually leads to most players packing the game in. People used to say to me, "Don't you play for fun anymore?" I said, "Fun? The fun went out of it a long time ago." He replaced the Green Bays with the fairway at Ombersley Golf Club, where he still plays 5 days a week, come rain or shine. "Is he any good?" I ask. "Absolutely not," comes his immediate response. Snooker and golf are the only two sports where you strike a stationary ball, so people tell me I should be a natural golfer, but I'm certainly not. I'm 87 years of age, and in the last 6 months, I'm pleased to say, I have shot under my age, which is not easy to do. He says a huge part of his life is Pedmore Sporting Club, which was established by local businessmen at Pedmore House in 1970 and has given £1.5 million to local good causes over the years. "I'm very proud of the work we do," says Rex. "We pay all the admin fees from our own pocket, so every penny we raise is given to good causes. I think that's unique among charities." A proud Baggies fan who is not short of opinions when it comes to the current side's woes, he tells me he was also handy at Crown Green Bowls in his younger days. Rex chuckles when I suggest he has dedicated his life to sport. "Sport has always been around me," he says. "My father was a keen athlete and was a member of Birchfield Harriers for 20 years. When we were all sitting around the table having a meal, my mother used to say, 'Can't we talk about something else but sport?' Nothing much has changed."
Thanks for that snooker loopy story, David. Now with the answer to the quiz, it's Mina. So Mina, are the answers ready?
They are. Are you ready? Here we go. Question one. What was the first title of the first ever episode of Doctor Who? And the answer is... An Unearthly Child. Question two. What was the name of the man who assassinated President Kennedy? And the answer here is Lee Harvey Oswald. Question three. In what year did Bob Geldof produce Do They Know It's Christmas? This, of course, was in 1984. Question four. What was the name of Britain's first computer programmer? And the answer here is Ada Lovelace. Question five. In what year was the first automobile race held in the USA? And the answer here is 1895. And finally, question six. How old was the oldest woman in the world? And the answer here is 117 years old. How did you get on? I'm sure you did brilliantly. There will, of course, be more trivia from Flashback Roger next week. Now, before I go, have another brain teaser for you to ponder. Are you ready? What am I? You can keep me or share me. But if you share me, I will disappear forever. The answer to that will be revealed next week. Now, to end this edition, we have for you another of Graham Fisher's Flights of Fancy.
Ah, genealogy, eh? Scratch below the surface to the roots of your family tree, and it's amazing what you can unearth about your ancestors. The following is just a dream, though I remember it well. Long ago, as a callow toddler, I sat on my grandmother's knee as she reminisced about the good old days, but with her husband eking out only the most meagre of incomes as an assistant ringer out to a one-armed window cleaner, times weren't that much better now. We were all of similar ilk, and the closeness of our kin was such that a man could introduce you to his wife, sister, and cousin, and they would all be the same woman. I was too young to understand, even though I harboured a certain curiosity as to my webbed feet. And my inherent ability to play the banjo is a mystery that to this day remains unexplained, though perhaps like a persistent upset tummy, it runs in the genes. Note to production crew, please confirm that sentence is permissible before the 9 p.m. watershed. Thanks. Anyway, Granny sucked longingly on a surrogate mouthful of fish tank gravel, whilst bemoaning the impossible cost of real pork scratchings, as around us the decaying signs of empire serenely corroded amongst the dignity that can only come from an aristocratic paucity. And she talked. Her vocabulary was as deficient as, like, whatever, but she was not one to bite off the hand that laid the golden egg in her eagerness to bat off the same hymn sheet. Production crew, you might like to check that bit as well. Well, one day, as my mother was getting the cold in, Granny related the tale of my late grandfather, an enigmatic forebear who was even now held in awe. Grandad, you see, was a part-time boat-handling competition judge. The fact that he was also a registered alcoholic produced some startling decisions. "Osprey is the winner," he declared triumphantly as the boat in question slid majestically beneath the surface, following its liaison with a cast-iron beam protruding just below water level. Then there was the national championships affair, amidst roars of expletive-laying peroration. 17 times the challenger rammed the bankside on the reversing exercise, and 17 times he was declared the winner by my granddad. It reached the stage where the punters didn't bet on the competitors, but instead bet on the outcome to be pronounced by granddad. In the days before waterway competitions became the haven of scrupulous fair play that they are now, there were plenty of pugs that tried to muscle in on the act. My granddad was always amenable to pocketfuls of money shoved his way in brown envelopes, and in different times may have made a singly efficacious politician. But on this occasion, the infamous All England Boat Handling Championships of 1886, to no one's surprise, he had spent it all on booze just as the competition hit full flow. By the finale, the nectar had kicked in as my granddad pulled the two contestants together for a tense tete-a-tete. "Either you boys got a sweetie," he said, producing a bag from his pockets and flailing helplessly with laughter. That did it. The championship was thrown into chaos. Tempers flared and the participants slugged it out in the time-honoured manner of fisticuffs on the quayside. A left, a right, the crowd oohed and aahed, another flurry, a stray blow to the jaw, and my granddad toppled like a speared pig, hitting his head on the stone jetty. "Ah, the pity of it all," bemoaned my grandmother, as she tenderly lifted the remains of the cash from his shirt pocket, whilst mentally reviewing her insurance policies. Alcoholic poisoning was the coroner's decision, which surely, to this day, rates as the strangest ever decision to any boat handling competition.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org. or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!